Chapter 3. Hey, whoa, Harrington, Steve, it's just me, man. In his panic, Eddie had a split second to wonder if he'd read this whole thing wrong, and Harrington was some kind of murderer on the run. A mastermind, looking for nubile sexy metalheads with hearts of gold to dismember in Deepwood's cabins. Oh my god, I drove us to my own murder site. But then Harrington blinked hard and released the death grip he'd had on Eddie's upper arm, which Eddie was grateful for because he had the hatchet in his good hand, which meant that zombie hand was doing the gripping. Ugh. The hatchet clattered on the floor and Harrington sat back so he was straddling Eddie's thighs instead of his stomach. Shit, dude, I'm so sorry. He rubbed his eyes with the back of his hatchet hand and shifted a little so his posterior was positioned right over Eddie's dick. Which, for the record, did not matter at all and Eddie was definitely not aware of it in any capacity. I thought you were... Ugh, it doesn't matter. Not your fault. He shook his head and shifted in place. Harrington looked down at Eddie properly then, and his eyebrows did that little thinking scrunch that was starting to become familiar. Wait, you're in different clothes. Did you leave and then come back? So many things were happening that Eddie just had to lie back and put his thoughts into a logical order before responding. Harrington waited patiently, straddling him, wearing nothing but threadbare sweatpants and sleep-mussed hair. We're sorry, your call to Eddie Munson cannot be completed as dialed. Please check the number and try again. Beep! Munson? Yep, right here, Harrington. Give me a minute. A wild animal just attacked me and I'm trying to coax my soul back into my body. His voice was dry and didn't squeak even once. Thanks, gay Jesus. Oh, sure. Sorry. If you apologise again, I'm going to call the police. Harrington huffed. They sat in a cosy, companionable silence. Just kidding. Eddie was dying inside and staring directly at Zombie Hand to ensure that he wasn't going to get a stiffy from Captain Oblivious, Scourge of the Gaze, who was still sitting merrily atop Mount Dick. Eddie had to tap out, or this was going to take an R-rated turn that he was certain Steve Harrington would not be prepared for. He smacked the menace's hip. Okay, all right. Soul has been retrieved. Now get off me, Harrington. What did they feed you at kidnapping summer camp? You weigh a ton. Harrington actually laughed at that, which had Eddie blinking and quirking up a lip. He'd never heard the dude genuinely laugh before. It was cute. He, like, threw his head back and everything. But thankfully, he was also a good listener. He rolled off of Eddie and leaned his back against the couch, shrugging at him apologetically. I can't say sorry. My nurse said it wasn't allowed. God, this dude. Eddie righted himself and crossed his legs. He dropped his chin into his hands and tried to remember what the fuck Harrington had even asked him. Oh, right. Yeah, I had to go tell my uncle I hadn't gone missing. He worries that I'm susceptible to peer pressure. Apparently joking about the disappearance was a green light, so what the hell? Sure enough, Harrington looked amused. But then his smile dropped. You shouldn't have come back, man. I wasn't joking last night. You really don't want to get caught up in this shit. Poor injured deer Harrington was looking at him imploringly. Like he could convince Eddie just with his eyes that he should turn right back around and head back to the trailer park. And to be fair, Eddie had definitely considered it because he had some semblance of self-preservation. But once Eddie fixates on something, he really fixates. And don't look now, but Steve Harrington was the brand new flavour of the season. Regardless, it was hard not to feel ever so slightly swayed by a full Harrington stare. He could see how, in a different light, that look could have persuaded him right out of his proverbial panties. Harrington had started glancing towards the door like he expected Eddie to just up and leave. "Ye of little faith, Sir Harrington." Eddie hummed. So, I play this game, yeah?" Harrington looked back at him with a scrunched brow that meant, "Dude, what?" "Shut up. I play this game with some friends of mine where we, like, go on adventures and shit. And you gotta make choices about what to do and where to go pretty often." Eddie leaned forward. "The unwritten rule of the game is that you should always choose whichever option would make the better story. Even if it seems really fucking dangerous." He leaned back again and matched Harrington's cool guy shrug. "Sometimes you make a choice and shit goes wrong. You can never really predict how the adventure will go, but I feel like leaving you to fend for yourself when some mysterious enemy is after you is like the lamest ending to the story I could have picked." Harrington was quiet for a while sporting that trademark confusion. Then, "Are you talking about Dungeons and Dragons?" Eddie's mouth fell open. He stood, aghast. "Who taught you those words?" And Harrington was laughing again, hard. Dude was clutching his gut and occasionally coughing out an ow in the middle. His wheezing got worse, but he just kept fucking laughing. Eventually, Eddie couldn't tell if he was being mocked or not, so he kicked at Harrington's knee. "I'm serious, dude, what the fuck? You ruined my cool-ass metaphor by knowing shit. It was supposed to be, like, mysterious and meaningful." The giggles finally faded and Harrington was wiping actual tears from his eyes. Maybe from the laughter or because he'd busted a few stitches, who knows. Eddie was too busy smiling at the wall to check. It was hard not to grin. The dude's laugh was contagious. God, he was bonding with Steve Harrington. When he could actually breathe again, Harrington explained, kind of. Apparently he had some friends, younger relatives, who played, and they had been fruitlessly trying to convince him to join in for years. Now this blew Eddie's brain out his ass, because Harrington hanging out with kids was wild enough to picture, without them being nerd kids. Lordy. What was the world coming to? But as he explained, he had this soft, faraway look in his eye, like he really cared about them. Like he cared about their hobbies and shit. Ugh. He'd known the dude for less than 12 hours. He was not going to get mushy about his faraway looks. Well, any more than he already had. But his little D&D anecdote worked because Harrington didn't try to convince him to leave again. Fuck yeah. Persuasion expert Munson cinches it again. They shot the shit for a while and talked around the elephant that had forced them together into the dim cabin room. Eddie told him their band was a metal band, not rock. Harrington tried and failed to turn that into a rock-paper-scissors joke for, like, 6 minutes, and finally stopped when Eddie brandished the hatchet. Harrington's music taste was trash, but he was deeply unpretentious about it, which made Eddie feel extra pretentious about his own hang-ups regarding pop and disco and shit. Eventually, they needed to eat. Eddie carried in the bags he bought from the van and Harrington promised in like 30 different ways he'd pay him back. None of the options were sexual favours though, which was a little disappointing. They threw together some emergency rations and ran out of small talk, so they just munched quietly on lukewarm Chef Boyardee. This time the choir was actually companionable, but was overshadowed by the miasma of questions that surrounded the battered man leaning against the couch. What the shit had happened to Steve Harrington? Why was he, by all appearances, extremely chill about it? And, maybe most impressively, Where the fuck did he pick up feral jaguar moves that allowed him to deck a dude the same height in 0 seconds flat when he'd been literally unconscious a moment earlier? Maybe Harrington had an inch on Eddie, but it was real damn close. And he had gone for the knees like some Cobra Kai motherfucker. King Steve was a notorious jock, but that shit wasn't a friendly sports time wrestle. That was some fucking barbarian shit. Eddie hadn't had much time to really look at him pre-straddle, but what he did see was scary. Like, shit, who the fuck goes right to hatchet on neck when they hear a squeak? It was a crazy contrast to the rumpled dude fishing for ravioli that sat across from Eddie now. He was eating with one hand and balancing the can against his opposite wrist. It was a wonder he wasn't covered in sauce, but nursemaid or no, Eddie Munson would not stoop to feeding him. God, they needed to do something about Zombie Hand. And that was another thing. The injuries Harrington had were suspect as all hell. Eddie had been trying hard not to think about it, but there was no mad scramble for bandages or frantic rustling in the dark now. It was light out, and Eddie could no longer deny that Steve Harrington looked like he'd been fucking tortured. Torture maybe seemed like a leap, but the damage to Steve's body painted a grim picture. Rope burn around both wrists. All the fingers on one hand broken, Blade Runner style. More rope burn around his neck, wider, like he'd struggled. And in the light, some of the bruises resolved themselves into the marks of meaty fingers on his skin. A hand gripping his forearm. Thumbs against his jugular. Just fucked up shit. Harrington clearly sensed Eddie's stare, which was understandable because it was blatant. And probably rude. His chewing got a little slower, and finally he set the can aside and started casting his eyes around the room. Weighing what to reveal, maybe. Eddie waited. Eventually it paid off. Harrington sighed noisily. All right, man. I really can't say much. Trying not to look eager, Eddie just crossed his arms and tilted forward ever so slightly. And really, he wasn't eager, exactly. He'd never seen anything like this except in movies and comics. He couldn't imagine whatever had happened was crazier than that shit. Eddie was wrong. The story was thus. According to Harrington, he was pulled from his bed in the dead of night and brought to a location that he said he recognised but wouldn't elaborate on. The men who took him, that's what he called them, the men, knew that he'd been involved in something that had happened with the mall back in July. He didn't explain that either, but he promised it was because he had to sign non-disclosure agreements with the US government and not because he thought Eddie was a narc. And we don't have time to unwrap all of that. So, Harrington, who had apparently been caught on some security footage at the mall, was chosen as a potential informant for the men, and they needed info about secret shit. And they weren't afraid to torture him to get it. He didn't actually say that bit in words, but he made some vague gestures and horrifically actually said, "But like I said earlier, not my first rodeo." And winked, like it made any of the nightmarish shit that preceded it better. He seemed to glean Eddie's acute trepidation because the smirk sort of flickered out, and then he just looked tired. Anyway, yada yada, secret bullshit, and Harrington found an opportunity to escape. It helped that he knew the layout of secret location, which the men didn't bank on. So when his regular handler came to drug him again, he'd said casually, indicating a red puncture on his neck. Harrington had headbutted the dude and then dipped like an ice cream cone. He actually said that. Eddie blamed his tenure at Scoops. He recounted the rest of the trek through the woods, but it sounded like it was mostly a blur of panic and adrenaline and trees. Eddie gave himself a point for the shock prediction, but he couldn't really muster the motivation to gloat. And then I saw the garage light on, and I figured I was either A, dying, and the light at the end of the tunnel ship was way more mundane than I expected, or B, about to make some very nice metalheads very uncomfortable. The way he said metalheads was halting. He looked to Eddie to make sure it was the right term. Eddie nodded, and Harrington smirked in success. Jesus. To be clear, it would have been easy to refuse the story at face value. There were more holes in it than the roof of Eddie's van, and the track marks on Harrington's neck could maybe point to a drugged-out delusion accompanied by weeks of kinky sex and morning regrets. But Eddie didn't doubt it for a second. Even when Harrington paused for like 2 full minutes in the middle and clearly omitted something significant, even then, Eddie believed him. And it wasn't because Harrington had sincere eyes. It's because, for most of the explanation, he didn't even bother looking at Eddie. He was lost in the memories, lost in whatever blanks filled those gaps and the shit that came after. He looked sort of like Uncle Wayne whenever he talked about his time overseas. It was a weird comparison because so far as Eddie knew, Harrington was 20 and had only left Hawkins seasonally for spring break or rich person vacations. But the similarity was there, and that was pretty fucked up. So yeah. Harrington tapped a finger on the floor. Here I am, fine and dandy and really regretting not setting the bones in my hand last night. Eddie looked at the hand and regretted it too. I was going to ask when we were going to fix that shit. Harrington grimaced. So, I can tell it grosses you out, man, and I didn't want to tell you. Oh God, now what? I think we're going to have to re-break the finger bones before we set them now, or they'll heal wrong. Eddie was at the door and losing his boy ID before Harrington could wiggle the fingers a second time. Cool. That cinches it. Apparently, Eddie had a visceral phobia of broken bones. It was always nice to learn new things about yourself. When he staggered back inside, Harrington assured him he didn't actually have to help with that part. And after the first attempt ended with Eddie heaving in the corner, he gracefully acquiesced. If macho man Steve Savage was willing to do unspeakable things to himself in the name of his appendages, then really, who was Eddie to disagree? Once Zombie Hand was finally dealt with, all strapped up with the equivalent of popsicle sticks and gauze, Eddie draped himself on the cushionless couch and listened to the pained, wheezing breaths across the room. The wheezes made it seem like a bad idea, but at this point he was gagging for a mental reprieve. Well, gee, that was a real treat. Want to split a spliff to celebrate? Steve, because he was Steve now in Eddie's head. You can't listen to someone systematically break several of their own bones without being on a first-name basis. Made a face that Eddie couldn't decipher. Normally I'd be all about that, Munson, but, drugs and I are kinda on a break, considering recent events. Fuck, obviously. Holy shit. Jesus. I'm really sorry, dude. I didn't even think about that. Steve waved him off. Not your fault, man. And honestly, go ahead. I'm gonna need some time to, like, process over here anyway. Eddie stared at him for a moment to make sure he wasn't just being nice, but Harrington's little shooing motion was all the permission he needed. The first puff felt like a homecoming. He'd basically been tense for 18 hours and he could hear his joints creaking with strain. A few minutes later and he let himself sink deeper into the couch. A few minutes after that, and he didn't even give a shit about the springs digging into his kidneys. And then he was asleep. It was dark again when Eddie woke up, and he had a moment of sheer panic before the events of the last day rolled back in. Then the panic receded to the polite hum that he'd become so well acquainted with of late. Weed naps were powerful forces. Eddie felt properly rested despite probably only being out for a few hours. He could still feel Steve's presence in the room. It was steady. Warm. Maybe a little sexy. Who can really say? When Eddie lulled his head over to confirm the latter, Steve was fiddling with something that Eddie couldn't see. It sounded like plastic scraping against plastic. There was a flashlight trained down into his lap that he must have had in his teeth. As he worked, Eddie just sat back and appreciated how nice his not-gross hand looked as it manoeuvred whatever it was he had found to occupy his time. He still hadn't bothered to find a shirt, which probably would have been easy to do since the sweatpants came from somewhere, but Eddie enjoyed how the light illuminated the soft contours of his abdomen. It took a lot of charisma to make hunched over and bloody look so very nice. Steve must have felt the change in the air because he looked up a second later. He pulled the flashlight from his mouth. "Hey there, Munson." Every time Steve said "hey" in that gravelly voice, Eddie felt a year get added to his life and an inch added to his boner. Ah, okay. He might still be a little high. "How is processing time, big guy? Do you feel enlightened?" Steve snecked a little laugh. "Bad news. I think I might be dumber." Eddie barked a laugh and sat up. "Ha! Impossible! We can't go any lower. We have to pull up." He mimed righting a plane and was gratified when Steve wheezed in his direction. All right. Easy on the bruise, guy." Eddie padded across the floor and sat next to him. "Yarr, what are we working on, Captain?" He got a side eye. "You're real fucking weird. You know that, Munson?" Eddie grinned and leaned closer towards Steve's lap. Steve helpfully lifted the object so Eddie could actually see it. "I knew there was one around here somewhere, but I can't figure out what its deal is." He sat up a little straighter. "Oh, you're a sound guy, yeah? Any chance you know how to fix a walkie-talkie?" Eddie squinted, wondering what the fuck a sound guy was, but when he looked at the device itself, he shrugged. "Done all sorts of shit I never thought I'd do in the last 24 hours, Harrington. Give me the fucking thing." Steve held the flashlight steady as Eddie poked and prodded and twisted. "Aha!" The culprit seemed to be the set of corroded batteries in the base. The same thing had happened to his first Walkman. He'd saved up for 2 years for that thing and had been nigh inconsolable until a dude at Radio Shack took pity and showed him how to fix it. Eddie rinsed the casing out with alcohol from their handy-dandy kit and fit some fresh juice in place. When the little indicator light flashed to on, Harrington shouted, "Let's go!" so loud that it probably alerted every kidnapper in the Tri-County area of their location. Eddie rubbed at his wounded ear and was about to sass the hell out of his compatriot when he was muscled into a one-armed hug. "You're a fucking genius, dude," Steve purred into his ear. "Said." He said it. Normally. In a normal, heterosexual way. Eddie couldn't even reach his hair tie because he was too busy being smothered in warm, bare man skin. Then Steve was ruffling his hair and Eddie squawked and pushed him away. All right, I get it, I'm your fucking hero. Why is an old walkie-talkie so goddamn exciting?" Steve just grinned at him, bright-eyed and impossible to stare at for more than a second. Eddie felt his ears heat and thanked his metalhead predecessors for the foresight of long hair. Because this. Steve twisted the dials until they sat on the frequency he seemed pleased with. He lifted the receiver. Henderson, this is your father speaking. The walkie-talkie exploded into a cacophony of shrieks and swearing that would have had Uncle Wayne blushing. In the end, their cabin stay together seemed like it was destined to end without much of a climax. Or any of the climaxes Eddie really wanted. Henderson, apparently one of the aforementioned nerd children, scolded Steve so fiercely that Eddie felt like he'd done the kid wrong. Steve was in trouble for everything. For getting caught, for taking so long to get uncaught, for not leaving breadcrumbs leading to his location in the first place, Hansel and Gretel style. Henderson, I had a bag over my head and was unconscious. Jesus, it's always excuses with you. He was in trouble for contacting Rob first instead of the kid. Because I knew this is exactly what would happen. Rob was the smarter choice. The shrieking after this proclamation had Steve lowering the volume of the receiver with a grimace. And he was in trouble because he hadn't cracked under torture. Apparently, he should have just given them what they wanted because getting tortured was stupid. This one rankled Eddie, but he resisted speaking up when he clocked the telltale sniffles through the plastic receiver. Steve just listened with his half smile, fond and tired. Eventually, they got to the good shit. Some other kids joined in the call, and why kids knew anything about this shady shit made Eddie real damn nervous. He was starting to get why Steve was so unwilling to give the men any info. And little by little, it seemed like a plan was made. Steve seemed surprised, like he expected for them to just agree that he should lay low forever instead of, like, get help. It was honestly exactly in line with Eddie's experiences thus far. He was tempted to kiss the stupid walkie-talkie and by proxy all the tiny voices inside for making Steve see the light. The plan didn't involve Eddie, obviously. There wasn't really a non-weird way to introduce your serendipitous cabin nurse to a herd of unfamiliar children. Eddie wasn't too broken up about it, though. Steve kept sending him these little looks. Like, can you believe this shit? It was nice to be included in Steve Harrington's in-jokes. At a certain point, a new kid was put on speakerphone from another state while another kid apparently held their walkie up to the phone. This was Will, who'd had some sort of inkling that something like this was going to happen. He was softer spoken than the other rabid mites and seemed deeply sympathetic to Steve's situation. Eddie liked Will. The chaos of the call wound down, and a few times Eddie swore he recognised the voice of the girl kid that would break in and redirect them when they got off track. He didn't know many girl kids, so he wondered if he'd run into her at school. She didn't talk often, and he was annoyed that he couldn't place it. And then it was over. California kid number two was having his sister reach out to someone to handle the Hawkins situation, and Steve could just sit tight and recover. It all sounded very dubious, but Steve looked genuinely relieved. Eddie, for his part, was feeling a little off kilter. There was clearly a lot going on here that he wasn't really privy to, but he shook it off when Steve grinned at him like the eighth time. He was so goddamn excited about getting in touch with the Rugrats. Ultimately, the excitement about the walkie took a lot out of poor Stevie, so it wasn't terribly hard to convince him to go to bed really damn early. He needed the rest anyway. The real nail in the coffin was Eddie swearing that he was exhausted too. Then Steve actually gave in. Eddie returned to his place on the couch after making sure that Steve was warm enough in his recovery cocoon. It was easy to doze off again with the smell of weed in the air and the soft tones of Steve Harrington arguing at him feebly that Tears for Fears had significant cultural value. The uneasy feeling in Eddie's gut hadn't fully disappeared, but he ignored it in favour of dunking on Steve's garbage interests. The morning came quietly. When Eddie blinked his crusted eyes open, Steve was already up and murmuring into the walkie. He had the full Harrington smile on and was rolling his eyes to whatever the other party was saying. And Eddie had a feeling it wasn't one of the kids. His stomach twisted a little and he pinched his wrist, irritated. He was probably just hungry. Steve caught his stirrings from his periphery. Probably because he had the situational awareness of a fucking jungle cat. He said his goodbyes to the mystery friend and ambled over to Eddie. His ankle was still fucked up, but he seemed content to ignore it and pretend he could walk like normal. "Morning, Munson." He wiggled the receiver. "My friend Robin says hello." Steve smiled, wider somehow. "She offers her sincere thanks for your sewing prowess keeping my insides from outsiding." His nose wrinkled. "Her words, not mine." Eddie didn't say anything. Robin. So. Not Rob. Which was fine, obviously. Just. The "I love yous" from the phone call 2 nights prior slid cleanly into place. Steve's smile faded a little. "Hey man, you alright?" Eddie shook his head until he was a bit more awake. "Yeah, sorry. Just a little foggy from having my organs molested by couch springs all night." Steve smiled again, thank God. "I know some real neat tricks for managing bruises if you need an assist there, bud." Eddie huffed an imitation of Steve's laugh. "That sounds fair to me. Next time you get to play nurse, your highness." He stood and made a theatrical little bow. They bickered and threw together some shitty ravioli breakfast. Eddie even managed to keep it down when Steve checked the splints on his fingers. Progress all around. His throat was feeling tight, and he smacked his knee a few times. Jesus, like what? Was he sad that Steve was in touch with his actual friends now? Bummed that the dude didn't have to rely on him anymore? Disappointed that their unplanned trauma field trip wasn't just for the two of them? None of the options were great. He didn't even know what his long-term plan would have been anyway. Maybe just live with Steve, watching him plod around shirtless until he was totally healthy, and then run away to the Bahamas and rub oil on his back while they shared a piña colada. He didn't bother snapping the tie. Steve was saying something about how Robin always knew what to say to make the crazy shit seem less crazy. The crow's feet by his eyes were all scrunched up and his voice was warm, like honey. This was more than friendship, more than best friendship. There was some deep history there that made every word he said seem like scripture instead of a meandering story about his ginger-haired perpetual co-worker. He was so goddamn fond it was making Eddie blush by sheer proximity. It was becoming pretty clear that his stupid metaphor about D&D was ridiculous in retrospect. Bodily harm and mortal danger? Easy. Big damn hero time. But risks to his shriveled little heart? Critical damage. Besides, Eddie wasn't the hero in this story. He was barely even an NPC. And when an NPC outstays their welcome, sometimes you just gotta bench him. All at once, Eddie was ready to go. "Hey man, I'm actually gonna take off if you're all set." Steve looked up, surprised. He seemed hurt. God, just yesterday Eddie was sure he could read all of Harrington's eyebrow expressions. Fucking delusional. Yeah, all right. Of course, dude. "You are all set, yeah? Got your cohort on walkie speed dial if something goes sideways?" "Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. I'm all set. Not even actively bleeding anymore." He slid his hands into the sweatpants pocket. They observed each other. Steve chewed his lip and then stepped forward, holding out his good hand. You're a really good guy, Munson. I promise I'll make it up to you someday. Eddie stared at the hand. After a moment, he took it. Steve's grip was firm and felt hot against his clammy palm. I promise, Harrington insisted. Eddie met his eye and nodded, unconvinced. Steve didn't seem to notice. He placed that hot hand on Eddie's shoulder next. Thank you. Seriously, Eddie. Thanks. God, Eddie was not going to cry because Steve Harrington turned out to be a pretty decent dude. Fucking hell. He managed another nod and patted Steve's shoulder twice, like a good bro would do. And then he left. Like a coward. Sometimes the switch just flipped like that for Eddie. He'd be riding a high and then crash so fast he wouldn't even realise he'd been grounded until days later. At least he was removing himself from the equation before his downward spiral caught a poor bystander like Steve Harrington. Dude was already battered enough. Eddie sniffled and started Bessie, sending Steve a peppy little wave as he watched Eddie's departure from the porch. Steve waved back and leaned against the doorframe. Eddie couldn't read his expression at all. He worked up a nice lather of self-pity as the van trundled its merry way back to civilization. This was always how it was going to end. He and Steve Harrington had no connection to each other outside of utter coincidence, and Eddie hated that only 3 minutes after turning the ignition, he already missed that stupid little half-smile that Harrington did when he thought something was a little funny, but not enough to actually laugh. Ugh. Pathetic. What true future metal megastar gets mopey because a floppy-haired little rich boy didn't want to smooch him against a wall? Ozzy probably got smooched against walls all the fucking time. Eddie sniffed theatrically and turned onto the main drag back towards the park. It was his own damn fault for getting possessive over Steve like he was a new toy instead of a dude with his own life. Eddie had started picturing himself beside Steve for the foreseeable future without even really registering it. And all it took was a half dozen prepubescent voices and one probably very nice band chick to make his sweet illusion implode. If he was still feeling sorry for himself by tomorrow, maybe he'd take a drive up to Indianapolis. The change of scenery always made it easier to forget whatever stupid Hawkins crisis he had manufactured. It was a very reasonable coping method. Oh, maybe he should go to school too. Maybe. Eddie pulled up to the four-way and reached over to find a mixtape in his glove compartment that would probably soothe his totally justified teen woes. But as he leaned, a flash of shiny black steel tore his eyes back to the street. He stared. The only fuckers in Hawkins with cars that nice were Harrington's. So either the mama and papa were finally coming home to mourn their lost son, or someone Eddie didn't know was sharing with him the ruralist stop sign in Hawkins. He wasn't sure which was less likely. But the men that drove past, blowing through the stop sign, he might add, looked nothing like Indiana-born natives. No siree. These fuckers looked like they were cloned in the basement of a DC government facility that shit out carbon copy G-men. Dark suits, sunglasses, shaved heads, and if his red-rimmed eyes hadn't deceived him, a black-gloved hand tapping along to some unknown beat on the dash. In another context, it would be almost funny. They were bang on what Eddie had pictured every time Harrington said, the men. With a gut feeling that was stronger than any bowel movement he'd ever suffered, Eddie did a sloppy U-ey to follow after the Chevy. They were about half mile apart and he followed for 1 mile. Then two. After three, he started to get jittery. They were the only cars on the road out here. Eddie fidgeted in his seat and tried to look like he wasn't about halfway to hyperventilating. These dudes totally looked like they would have guns. Many guns, even. What expression are you supposed to make when you don't want people to know you're tailing them? Eddie forced a grin. Perfect. His gut proved to be a clever bitch because, sure enough, that Caprice two-door death wagon turned onto the quasi-invisible forest road to Harrington's cabin. They didn't even hesitate either, like they knew exactly where they were going. Eddie wasn't grinning anymore. Fuck. Fuck! He wanted to rev the van and just slam the fuckers, but he'd played a rogue in three separate campaigns. He knew damn well that the element of surprise could yield essential bonus damage. Eddie tapped shaky fingers against the steering wheel. Jesus fuck, I am not built for this shit! Eddie turned his wheels back toward the woods. His tiny boy trouble tantrum meant that he couldn't beat them there, but he sure as shit wouldn't be far behind. Chapter 4. Eddie was jittering with nerves by the time he pulled the van off the road. He couldn't see the cabin yet, but if he got any closer, then the G-men would definitely hear old Bessie roar hello. No sooner than his boot hit dirt, gunshots were ringing. Birds, disturbed from their canopies, burst out and up, leaving feathers to flutter elegantly down onto the shit show that was Eddie Munson's existence. Jesus! Shit! He dove for cover behind the van and waited with a hand pressed to his chest. His heart was beating so hard it hurt. Eddie's chest stung with the force of the pumps. There was shouting and then another shot. Nothing pinged against the metal of his van, so he figured, hoped, that the gunfire was isolated at the cabin. Wait. Wait, no! Harrington was at the fucking cabin. Remember, jackass? The whole reason you're even here? God damn it! Keeping low, Eddie ducked and weaved and even braved a totally intentional strategic role. There weren't any more shots yet, but the yelling was still ongoing. One voice, as he got closer, was unmistakably Steve. Thank fucking Christ! Eddie reached the periphery of the clearing and stopped, trying to actually observe the situation before throwing himself directly into it. And boy howdy, it was a crazy fucking scene. Harrington was standing on the steps of the cabin, still shirtless, God love him, holding a handgun in his good hand. To Eddie's disgust and pride, the trusty hatchet was clutched by zombie hand at his side. If they ended up having to break those fingers again, Eddie was gonna sue. One G-man was on the ground, coughing wetly and clutching at his leg. The other two stood a bit to the side. The guy on the right was aiming a second handgun directly at Steve. Lefty was clutching a piece of rectangular tech that looked like a walkie, but not. It had a big-ass antenna, though, and was blinking and beeping obnoxiously. It was a standoff. A proper one with guns and everything. You know who was built for this shit? Steve goddamn Harrington, apparently. Eddie would fucking love to know how injured ass Harrington managed to get a G-man gun without getting shot to shit, but he was a bit worried he'd get so hard so fast his brain would suffocate. Fuck you, hair tie, this shit is hot and you know it. Okay, hot, but also terrifying. He'd need a good goddamn stealth roll to do anything remotely useful here. But then, maybe it was time to take a page out of Steve's barbarian handbook instead. Eddie ducked back into the brush and retraced his steps until he found what he was looking for. A few of the traps had clearly been tripped, thank you, paranoid cabin owner, but there were still several beautifully pristine bear traps ripe for the picking. And so pick he shall. He didn't expect the things to weigh like 20 fucking pounds, though. Fuck! When he stumbled back into position, there hadn't been much change. Steve was talking to his assailants quietly now and probably saying some sexy heartthrob bullshit about how he wouldn't go quietly or whatever. G-Man with the gun didn't seem convinced, but couldn't make a move without getting ganked. G-Man with the walkie thing, however, appeared to be dialing or typing or something onto a central panel of the device. The gun didn't look to be working as much of a deterrent there. God, if he was calling for backup somehow, they were mega fucked. So, summoning every lesson he remembered from the solitary week he was on a Little League team, Eddie fucking cannonballed a bear trap at the back of the armed G-Man's head. It hit home, and the clearing exploded into confusion and an overpowering, guttural scream. Boom! Take that, you motherfucker! Eddie crowed as he sprinted towards Steve, who wasn't moving, and was staring at Eddie with sparkly eyes that would have looked at home on a Care Bear. You came back! Fucking run! Eddie beckoned frantically and Steve burst into motion. The walkie-talkie G-Man stepped between Steve and the trees, and before Eddie could even think, Steve had reared back and crushed his face in with the butt of the handgun. Hot. Hot. Hot, 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 hot. Hot. The G-Man on the ground, who hadn't been bear-trapped, was lunging for him next, and Steve rolled over his back like James fucking Bond and finally got moving in Eddie's direction. Eddie was resisting the urge to just, like, drop down and blow him in front of all of these poor, innocent federal assailants. Then Steve reached his side and together they bolted. The two of them dipped into the trees, running at full tilt and struggling to stay upright as they dodged roots and ducked under branches. Eddie wasn't sure how long they ran, but eventually the raging shouts turned to muffled echoes. He slowed his gait and Steve followed suit. They gradually came to a stop, both wheezing, but they couldn't stop for good. They'd left a hell of a trail that Jeff's dad could probably have tracked in the dark. If the G-Men had any experience traversing a forest, they'd catch up easy. Eddie grabbed for Steve's hand to pull him forward and recoiled. Jesus! Why are you so fucking hot? A wheeze. Excuse me? Your wrist, asshole! You're like on fire! Eddie shook out his hand as though he'd actually been burned. Harrington blinked. Oh, I think I've had a fever pretty much since we got to the cabin. Are you shitting me? No, man. It sort of occurred to me when I took that shower yesterday. It didn't even really feel cold. Nice, right? Holy fuck. They'd escaped a literal shootout and Eddie Munson was going to murder Steve Harrington. A slideshow played in Eddie's mind. The unnatural heat of his hand during that terrible handshake. The fact that he didn't say shit about the cold even once. Even though he'd been shirtless for like 3 fucking days. Oh man, his cheeks so pink Eddie could see them in the fucking dark. God, no wonder Eddie hadn't graduated yet. Okay. Shut up, Steve. Steve blinked. I didn't say anything. Doesn't matter, just shut up, holy shit. Eddie crouched down into a squat and put his face in both hands. Okay, we need to keep going, but I need you to tell me right now if you are injured, sick, or ailing in literally any other way. Silence. Eddie swung his head up. Steve, you told me to shut up. Whatever deep, apoplectic anguish Eddie had on his face had Steve wincing. Wow, okay, other than the stuff we treated and the ankle and, fever? I mean, I'm pretty sure my breathing is a little fucked up because of some broken ribs, but that's it. Ah, the constant wheezing. Yep, checks out. He wondered if Steve would even have told the truth if he wasn't whacked out with fever heat. And Eddie had just fucking left him. Alone. For like, maybe 30 minutes, but still. Twigs snapped and crackled in the distance, but not distant enough. Eddie sprung up. All right, Stevie. I'm going to have a full-on crisis about everything you just said to me later. What? Shut up. I would carry your jockass, but that torso is a time bomb of bad decisions, so we need to find somewhere to hide. Now. A feverish Steve was an accommodating Steve. He just nodded and they stomped off deeper into the woods. Eddie tried to clear a path as much as he could because they only had one pair of shoes between them, Steve's lonely sneaker long since abandoned. Well, Fever Steve was accommodating for like a minute. They were soon tucking themselves beneath an outcropping on the steep drop to the lake, and Steve had so many questions. Why exactly did we not run for the van again? For the 6.5 time, dude, I have a plan. Plus, I think the walkie-talkie guy was calling for reinforcements. Huh. I thought that was a fancy clock or something. Why the shit would he be frantically dialing on a clock? Man, I don't know. They're on a schedule. You gotta be nice to me right now. I have a fever. If he dared to look behind him, Eddie was certain he'd have to deal with Steve Harrington pouting. He did not look. Okay, genius, tell me again. Who decided to shower in 50-degree weather and then sleep shirtless on a dirty couch with open wounds, Stevie? Huh? Who made that call? Then Steve was cackling and Eddie had to whip round and muffle his dumb, pretty mouth so they wouldn't give away their position. Look, dipshit, he whispered. Steve was grinning deliriously through his hands. The plan is that they don't find us and eventually give up the chase. They leave in their beautiful, beautiful car and then we, he tapped each of their chests in turn, go to where I hid Bessie and get out of here without armed men in pursuit. Steve swayed a little in place. Bessie is a cute name for the van. Eddie rolled his eyes. Thanks. My kid neighbour came up with it. Apparently, if you look at her dead on, she sort of looks like a cow. That story is really cute. Jesus, everything is just really cute right now, huh? The hovel they cozied up in wasn't foolproof, but it would take some really bad luck for the G-men to spot them. So discovery was probably a sure thing. Eddie considered putting his optimism sweater back on, but then remembered being right about the fever and internally unravelled that shit. But there was a cover of bushes at the top of the hill and enough bramble on the way down that Eddie was itching at his legs through his jeans. Shit was potent. And, ideally, a good fucking deterrent for pursuers. Steve's breathing was steadier, so Eddie offered a question of his own. By the way, did you bring your walkie? Getting some backup for our sorry asses wouldn't be a bad call. Steve sniffled morosely. Nah, man. I think that's how they found me, actually. Henderson radioed like a minute after you left to say the signal had been compromised. Apparently, I used it wrong. The way he said, you left, made Eddie squirm guiltily. How do you use a walkie wrong? Dunno, Munson. I just accept what the kid says at this point. Arguing with him gives me grays. Eddie looked at Steve's hair skeptically. Uh-huh. They settled back and waited. A thin October drizzle was starting up, but the dirt they sat on stayed mercifully dry. Little by little, everything started to smell like mulch and grass. Steve watched as Eddie drew a tiny pentagram into the dirt. "Do you think I killed that guy with the bear trap?" Steve stared at him. "That was a fucking bear trap? Holy shit, dude!" Eddie almost mustered a smile, but couldn't quite nail the landing. Steve caught the mood quick. "I sort of doubt it. Like, the odds of it snapping closed in the right position to, like..." Steve mimed crunching something between his hands. "I feel like it would be, what's the word? Astronomical? That's the ticket." Steve pointed at him. He dropped his hand. "With shit like this, though, Munson, you can't worry about that shit the same way." Eddie twisted around. "Can't worry about killing people." Steve made a so-so hand gesture. "I mean, I guess it hasn't been people so much in my case, but when it's life or death..." He shrugged. "Gotta choose life." Eddie let this digest for a while. Then stupid, feverish Steve leaned against his side to add, "Oh, but not in the weird Christian way. I respect a lady's right to choose. More like Wham, you know?" Well, there it was. Steve Harrington was the dumbest man on earth, and Eddie was falling in love with him. The rain hadn't let up, and Steve's fever was starting to become a real fucking capital I issue. Eddie knew it was bad because Steve actually fucking said something about it. So, shit was clearly dire. He'd been peeking over the outcrop and listening for bazookas or grenades or whatever the hell they'd be dealing with next. He was holding the handgun Steve had usurped from the assholes, but he didn't totally know how to, you know, use it. He held it gingerly, like a wet paper towel. Even so, it was comforting to have in hand. Then Steve had pulled on his jeans a little. Eddie gently placed the gun aside and dropped back down beside him. "You rang?" Steve was listening to one side and jerked himself back upright. "I'm actually not feeling too hot, dude." "No shit." Eddie immediately reached out and felt his forehead. He didn't know why he expected any new information that way, but sure enough, Steve was fucking steaming when it couldn't have been warmer than 60 out. He pulled off his jacket and scolded himself for not doing it earlier. Even though the leather was worn, it didn't fit over Steve's burly biceps, so Eddie settled for directing Steve's head onto his lap and laying the leather over him like a blanket. Little tremors were racking through Steve's body, and he pushed deeper into the meat of Eddie's thigh. Poor dude looked so pale and drawn that Eddie couldn't even get horny about it. He let Steve lay there until his eyes fluttered shut. And then he just looked so cosy that Eddie figured he'd stay put for the long haul. His uncle had raised him to help people in need, and as the last 20 however many hours had indicated, Steve was needier than most. It wasn't in a bad way, though. It was nice to take care of someone else for a change. Eddie knew he didn't have his shit together. He also knew he probably never would. He was too weird, too alt, too loud, too big, too. And he was queer, of course. The perfect punchline in 1980s America. So his uncle did what he could to keep him safe. Keep him in school. Keep him fed. And his friends did their part to keep him sane. Ish. But ultimately, was a whole lot of care being put into a guy that society would never accept. Not really. He always felt itchy and guilty when people took care of him. It was nice to be on the other side. Eddie looked down at the guy in his lap. And then we have Steve Harrington. A perfect example of someone held aloft by the peons of traditional society while Eddie and his ilk were cast to the dogs. Well, so he had thought. In just about every way possible, Harrington had zigged where Eddie thought he'd zag. He was funny in a hapless sort of way, selfless to a fault, a huge, gaping fault. And he was apparently hiding a life of war under a $2 can of hairspray. He was also totally unconscious at the moment. Steve murmured, and Eddie brushed back his damp hair. Ugh, ew, sweaty. I thought that shit was supposed to be romantic. He wiped his hands on his jeans and leaned against the wall of dirt. And that was another thing. Romantic. In a weird way, he could see himself being friends with Steve someday. But love? Hysterical. The Oscar for Best Leading Man in Comedy 1985, if you please. He wasn't even sure that comedy even was a category at the Oscars, but whatever. The point was, you can't unstraight a boy just by having your fingers inside him for a little while. Especially if it was only to stitch him closed. The world could be cruel sometimes. The day dragged itself by and Eddie's legs were getting numb. He couldn't even fidget in this position and it meant his brain was basically on hyperspeed to compensate. Nothing to do but stare down at a zonked out Steve Harrington and feel soft, squiggly feelings about him. Eddie had been in love before, with mostly straight guys because that's sort of the way of it when you live in a place like Hawkins. He always fell fast and consequently crashed and burned even faster. But it didn't matter because he never really expected any of it to go anywhere. Ever. Being a drug dealer was hazardous enough. Been out and proud on top of it? A death sentence. And for bonus points, according to the local church bulletins, D&D of all things was easing its way onto everyone's shitlist radar now. So, if the math checks out, that made Eddie a devil-spawn trifecta. New record, baby. At the end of the day, he didn't want to make more trouble for Wayne. And though he'd never tell him this, that was reason enough to look, and look only. Forever. It was a lucky thing, then, that Steve Harrington was nice to look at. Love was a strong word, sure. You know what was an even stronger word? Stephen Harrington, former king of Hawkins High, is currently sleeping on my lap. Okay, that may have been more than one word, but as far as Eddie was concerned, it was the strongest series of words in the history of all mankind. Eddie checked Steve's pulse and felt his forehead. Still hot, but the shivering had tapered off. His pulse felt, beat-y. He didn't totally know what to look for other than that. He settled back and left his hand on Steve's temple. It was a waste of energy to keep taking it off when he just put it back 2 minutes later. There had been no gunshots or explosions for the better part of 2 hours and evening was falling fast. The rain had picked up into a deluge and then quieted back into a drizzle by the time Steve was coming back to consciousness. He blinked up at Eddie, bleary and pink in the face.
You're still here.
God, that scratchy voice just tugged at the heartstrings. The boy was such a hazard. Where the hell will I have gone, Steve? I'm pretty sure I just put myself on the same watch list as you by bear-trapping a federal agent. Steve seemed a little more lucid. He smiled, but it wasn't a happy one.
They're not feds, dude.
All right. At this point, withholding the world building from the PCs was seriously impeding their ability to strategize. What the fuck were they then, Steve? He didn't bother making it a question. To his credit, Steve didn't waffle much this time. He just let out a big breath and struggled upward until he was sitting. He shifted Eddie's leather jacket to his back and pulled it tight around his shoulders. They're Russians. Not sanctioned by any government. Some fringe extremist group, I think. He fiddled with his damp bangs, looking equal parts resigned and cagey. The shit that happened at the mall? They found tapes of footage where I was working with someone who has a special sway over these big animals. And they wanted to find that person so they could breed more of the animals. Eddie stared. From what I can tell, they don't think Big Mama Russia has been proactive enough uncolding the war, so... He shrugged. They're trying to tip the scales by breeding some secret weapons. Eddie was staring so hard that Steve's fever pink ears eased into scarlet. Big wild animals. Steve paused and then shrugged a shoulder. Eddie stared at the shoulder too. You're saying they're Russians, trying to find a lion tamer who you happen to know because they want to make baby Russian lions for war. This time, when Steve shrugged, he threw his arms all the way up. And they're here because this animal trainer was training animals in a Hawkins, Indiana mall. Man, I know how it sounds, but it's the easiest way to explain it. I think I'd be fine with the hardest option then, because what the fuck are you talking about? God, this is why I'm never in charge of explaining shit. Despite himself, Eddie started to giggle. And not long after that, Steve was giggling too. They snorted and pushed at each other, both trying to shush the other when one of them got too fucking loud about it. But God, what the fuck else was there to even do? Okay, God, fuck, all right. We gotta escape the Russian baby lion breeders because you pissed in their Russian Cheerios by not telling them about your mysterious lion tamer bestie at a mall. It all adds up. Don't worry. Steve was grinning at Eddie, all sparkly again. You're really something else, huh, Eddie? Me? I am? Steve smacked at his legs so they didn't break down into giggle fits again, but he was still grinning all stupid. Yeah, you, asshole. Now, do you think we can make it back to Bessie? Eddie deadpanned a look at Steve as he let out a low moo. But then he actually thought about it. It had been quiet for a while and would be way easier to skulk around in the dark. It was just past twilight. I think it's better than drowning in this mud coffin we've built ourselves. Let's give it a go. Eddie demanding the real story seemed to have loosened Steve's lips because as they wove their way back towards Bessie, he had all sorts of things to say. It could be the fever talking, but Eddie had decided to think that the man was starting to trust him a little. He told him all about Robin and the kids. Apparently they were as buck-fuck wild crazy as Steve, but with an extra layer of that perceived youthful invincibility that had Steve pulling out his hair. And, as loath as he was to admit it, Eddie was getting kind of excited about the prospect of meeting Robin. Yeah, she was his arch-nemesis, but she also seemed like a total bro. She was actually in some of his classes too, and he was regretting not getting more in with the band crowd. If they were as freaky as Rob, he'd probably fit right in. They made it back to Bessie unscathed, and Steve let out a little whoop when she came into view. Eddie smacked his arm. There could be an ambush, and he did not want to get Jaguar tackled by anyone other than Steve. Thank you very much. He snapped the hair tie. Back in business, baby. Oh yeah, I've been meaning to ask. What's the deal with that? Eddie mmmed in question as he climbed into the driver's seat. Steve dutifully went around and got back onto his bloody throne. The hair tie thing, I mean. I feel like I've seen you do that like 30 times an hour, dude. Bessie roared to life. Eddie bit at his lip. Maybe a little risky, but... I snap it to help distract me from your overwhelming sexiness, Harrington. It came out as sarcastic. Steve burst into laughter. What the fuck, man? He had that answer ready so fast. Jesus. He rubbed at the corner of his eye. You're a funny guy, Munson. Eddie smirked and reversed out of the clearing, aiming back toward the main road, mostly on muscle memory. Oh, I know. They just drove for a while and tried to decide where the hell to go next. Eddie tentatively, against his own better interests, recommended they go to the police. Steve made a derisive little sound. Nah, man, those guys are useless now that Hop's gone. Eddie quirked a brow. Hop? Like, Chief Hopper? You call the Chief of Police Hop? Steve was quiet beside him. Former Chief of Police, now. Ah, that's right. Eddie cleared his throat. You were close to him? A thoughtful hum. More like pulled together by circumstance. But even though he was a cop, he was all right. Kind of a dickbag sometimes and still a cop, but he cared about the kids, you know? Eddie didn't, but he still got it. He'd had run-ins with the guy before and yeah, definitely cop energy, but with an undercurrent of dad that was hard to ignore. Also an undercurrent of daddy that Eddie ignored with all his might. May he rest in peace. All right, no more good cops left, so what's our move? Steve thought about it. I think we should go to the old buyer's house next and wait for my Cali friends to have their contact handle the rest of the Russians. God, that sentence fucking ruled. But Eddie shuddered a little. That place gives me the heebies like crazy, man. Steve turned to him. You've been there? Did you know Jonathan? Oh, Jonathan, huh? Expected more animosity there, to be honest. He laughed. Nah, we're cool. He's a good dude. A little weird, but a good heart, you know? Eddie wouldn't know, but good for Steve for growing or whatever. Huh. But no, I didn't really know him. I just smoke weed there sometimes when I don't want to go to school. Steve snorted. God, that house could use some weed in it. Good for you, dude. So on they went to safety for the second time. But not before Steve dropped a hastily scrawled note into the Henderson kids' mailbox. I just don't want to get yelled at again. And that was fair. This time, settling into a safe house felt like old hat. They stashed the van and stepped over the caution condemned tape. Steve eyed Eddie warily until he actually came through the front door and shut it behind them. I'm not going to bail again, dude. I didn't think you were. Just wondering if you wanted to go check in with your uncle or see your friends or whatever. We're going on day 4 here. Eddie shook his head. Don't worry about my shit, dude. My shit is handled. Your shit, however, is strewn around like the aftermath of a fucking chimp festival. Don't know what that means, but I take it you're staying? Yeah, man. I'm staying. Steve seemed pleased. Then, to Eddie's anguish, he elaborated. I'm really glad you're here, man. It's nice to have someone my own age to hang out with. Eddie rearranged his hair to hide that he was feeling feelings. This is hanging to you, Harrington? My standards have gotten fucky in the last few years. Sue me. The house was somehow even less furnished than Cabin Hell, so they just sat on the floor of what, according to Steve, used to be Jonathan's room. Eddie picked at the carpet and appreciated a stain on the ceiling. Steve just collapsed onto his back because the dude had no sense of germ avoidance. They'd bought the G-Man gun inside, but at this point it felt like they just had it with them on principle. A matte black safety net. They each took a moment to exist. This house was still creepy as shit, but in a way that made it almost feel safer. Like no one with a working fight or flight response would bother approaching. Eventually, Eddie joined Steve lying on the floor. Steve tipped his head sideways to glance at him. Before they left for California, Jonathan and I would hang out here sometimes, just listen to music. It was nice. Eddie chewed on that. So, dude steals your girl and beats the shit out of you, and you still end up buddies? You're a forgiving guy, Harrington. I'm back to Harrington, huh? Eddie tried to remember if he'd called him Steve to his face and couldn't. Shit. Whatever. Sorry, your liege. Figured I was getting too familiar with the higher-ups. Steve reached over and weakly smacked his knee. Knock that shit off, man. Then he paused. A grin that made Eddie deeply nervous overtook his face. Actually, if I'm the king, does that make you my knight in shining armour? Eddie coughed on a dust mote. I think that's usually reserved for princesses, dude. Steve scoffed from the floor. I could totally be a princess. A series of lewd images flashed through Eddie's mind that he tried to quell and couldn't. He snapped the hair tie like four times in a row, and that just made Steve laugh. Picturing me in a dress, Munson. So here's the thing. When you're hanging out with straight dudes in Hawkins, you can never be too careful about making that one joke that tips over the edge into getting your ass beat. But Steve was something else. He was still a straight dude jock guy from small town nowhere. However, after you spend a certain amount of time running for your life with someone, you might start to take a few social liberties. I was picturing less, actually, Eddie drawled out, long before he'd finished running the equations in his head on whether or not it was even close to a good idea. And there was silence. In the four or so beats after he said it, Eddie lived and died 1,000 tiny deaths. He ran through every single potential outcome and saw how many of them went bad. He saw himself walking out of the door and back into the woods alone, leaving Bessie to rust and die outside the tomb he just made for this sort of friendship. But the disgust he was waiting for hadn't come. Eddie cautiously opened his eyes, not registering having closed them to begin with. Sound rushed back in and he heard the noise before his brain processed that he was hearing laughter. Steve was curled to the side, gasping a little as he giggled. Just like back in the woods, dude was tickled pink. Literally. The ear Eddie could see was rosy as all hell. Steve coughed as the giggles tapered. You don't really have to imagine, man. You've seen most of me at this point. He gestured across the expanse of his body. Helplessly, Eddie followed the gesture all the way down. He sure had. God bless America. Steve was still wearing Eddie's leather jacket over his shoulders and the beat-to-shit sweatpants that were even more beat-to-shit than before. His feet and ankle were all sorts of fucked up after their trek through the woods, so Eddie kept his gaze politely above ankle level. It's rude to gag when you're ogling. Eddie cleared his throat three times. And then four. He was feeling choked up. I'm gonna see if this place has water somewhere, man. Steve waved him out of the room, still giggling. So, he'd made two undeniably queer-ass comments like that and hadn't gotten punched. Hadn't even had to defend himself or over-explain or pretend he was somehow talking about a girl. Steve took it as a joke, obviously, but he didn't even, like, rear back with revulsion. It wasn't acceptance, but it felt something like it. Eddie could count the number of friends he could joke around with like that on one hand. Adding Steve into the mix felt like it fit. Steve fit right onto his hand, is what he was saying. Eddie bit back a stupid smile and jogged back to the van. He grabbed two water bottles and snagged the Mars bar from the gas station. This felt like a moment to celebrate. They weren't dead, and he flirted at Steve Harrington with no consequences. Fuck yeah. Best Sunday he'd had in months. The two of them cracked open the water bottles and split the Mars bar. Steve kept shooting him these goofy little grins, and if he did it one more time, Eddie was going to push him down and... A bike bell rang in the distance, and Steve shot up. Henderson! You can identify the children by their bike bells, Eddie called as he followed Steve's staggering jog to the door. Steve flipped him off and stumbled onto the porch. It was the curly-haired kid from the trailer park who'd been hugging Mayfield. Oh my god, girl kid on the walkie was Mayfield. Duh. Eddie smacked his forehead and stepped out beside Steve as the kid, Henderson, jogged forward to meet them. Holy shit, Steve, you look like a pile of fucking garbage. Steve was already holding his arms out for a hug, and the kid went in without hesitation, pulling that pile of garbage in close. Eddie resisted the horrible urge to coo. After a long moment, Henderson pulled back and smacked Steve on the arm. Asshole! Steve shrugged, like, what can you do? Then Henderson registered Eddie. He turned and stepped back like he'd been jostled by a gust of wind. Hold on. You're the guy who runs the D&D club. You run a club for it? Steve was starting to grin again. Shut up, Steve. Yeah, hey, little man. Eddie Munson. Eddie held out a hand and Henderson took it, reverently. To the side, Steve raised his eyebrows. Yeah, take that, bitch. Eddie could be cool to kids too. Henderson seemed to snap out of his wonder and jogged back to retrieve his bike. He rolled it up and passed them into the house. All right, nerds, we've got some planning to do. Nerd? Eddie mouthed at Steve, pointing at him. Steve just smiled and lightly pushed at Eddie's chest before following his curly little bro inside. Henderson's plan was similar to what they'd discussed on the walkie, but with a few key changes. Steve was still to lay low, but with Henderson on walkie duty. Apparently they needed an expert when it came to the tech. Then, when dealing with the Russians was done, Robin and Nancy fucking Wheeler would come collect Steve and Henderson. Probably tomorrow morning. And, presumably, Eddie would drive himself home and forget this ever happened. Yeah, right. Anyway, since the Russians had already made a move, it would be easier for Steve's contact to tail them and deal with them. Which brought them to the contact. Saying the contact over and over was way cooler than realising it was just an old guy named Murray. Henderson explained that he was the bond to Henderson's Q, which seemed like such a colossally backwards concept that Eddie had to sit down for a second. As fucking nuts as it sounded, though, this Murray guy had already gone and checked out the cabin. He'd confirmed that two of the three they'd seen yesterday were taken care of, and the third was AWOL, but had left without taking the Chevy. Murray figured he'd been picked up by backup when he got too deep into the woods to double back after dark. Apparently, Special Agent Murray had also requisitioned the Caprice for himself. Because fuck those Steve-torturing assholes. Murray's next move was to connect with some people he'd met via an online forum, a phrase that meant nothing to Steve or Eddie, and maybe also Henderson, who deflected by saying his girlfriend understood it, and that's all that mattered. Regardless, he was meeting with strangers and putting together some sort of old guy Russian neutralisation task force. Which was all very metal, but Eddie was perfectly fine having no part in it. He'd had enough excitement to last an eternity. He was all set, thanks. Steve, looking happy but boneless on the floor, seemed to agree. So, Henderson was the messenger and tech genius, but he also came to protect Steve, not realising he had already acquired a sexy, mysterious bodyguard. And sure, maybe Eddie had noodle arms, but he doubted that Henderson had ever thrown a bear trap at a Russian. He was not being competitive with a preteen. Honest. Henderson, Dustin actually, turned out to be a cool fucking kid. After going over the basics of the plan and getting Steve's feet and ankle all bandaged up, they returned to Jonathan's room and Dustin asked him about 30 questions a second about his latest campaign. Talking to the kid was easy, and soon they were deep in a discussion of the coolest modules released in the last year. Steve was lost immediately, but seemed totally content to just lounge on the carpet like a cat and occasionally make contributing comments. Is the Undercity like a city full of mole people? God, Steve, for fuck's sake! It was just a question. Henderson, call your jets. Some time would go by and then... Is there a word for when you get a gnome and an elf, bang it out and have a baby? Like, wouldn't that just be a normal-sized person? An empty water bottle bounced off Harrington's forehead. Ow! Rude, Dustin. Eddie had never been happier. Dustin and Steve told Eddie more about their friends, and in turn, Eddie told them about his uncle and the band. When Eddie mentioned that both Jeff and Gareth also played D&D, he thought Dustin's eyes would pop out of his head. Steve was leaning on his elbow, watching them interact with his signature half-smile. After a bit, he dozed off, and Eddie flapped a hand at Dustin when he went to rouse him. Dude, leave him. He's in bad shape. Eddie murmured. There was a pause, and then... I know. I wanted to make sure he was breathing. Crickets. Well, shit. That was when it became brutally obvious to Eddie how worried the kid really was. He'd been darting his eyes to Steve over and over throughout the night, but Eddie just figured it was because Steve's validation was very powerful. There was no doubt now that Dustin had seen some of the same shit that Steve had. He looked scared and stoic and a bit dead-eyed, altogether showcasing too much tragedy on the face of a kid that barely reached Eddie's waist. Eddie scooted over on the carpet and slung an arm around Dustin, who recoiled at first in surprise and then, tentatively, leaned in. This might not sound like an upside, but I can promise you he was in much worse shape earlier. Dustin raised an eyebrow and Eddie sort of rocked him. What I mean is I think he's going to be all right. I know he looks rough, but he's way more alert and shit than he was yesterday. It seems like he's on the mend, kid. Don't worry. Dustin relaxed a bit and sort of sighed. He was hemming and hawing, so Eddie nudged him. Spit it out, dude. I just... He started and then tried again. I know what his reputation is like at school, Eddie, but Steve's a really good guy once you get to know him. He doesn't deserve this shit. Eddie and Dustin stared at the resting form of King Steve in silence. His breathing was rattly, but he wasn't rolling or fidgeting. The sleep seemed steady. It was sweet that the kid was trying to protect him. Even now. Even his reputation. I do know, Eddie finally added. That he's a good guy, he clarified at Dustin's look. And he did. And in some ways, it fucking sucked. Dustin seemed mollified, but then he sniffled a bit and Eddie stiffened. Oh God, if he starts to cry, then Eddie was going to cry and they could not have that. Seemed he was out of fucking luck because Henderson, the emotion-having little shit, followed up by saying into the dark of the room, he's got a will, man. Like, all ready to go. And Eddie knew that too. From the first phone call he'd eavesdropped on, he knew that. But God, it really did suck to think about it. He still didn't totally understand what nightmares these people were coming from, but the feelings were real. And Eddie understood feelings better than most. It's what made him so good at annoying the shit out of people, usually. Dustin wiped his face. Robin mentioned it on accident when she called because she was freaking out, and that made me freak out, and I can't stop thinking about it. Eddie took a shuddery breath and just pulled the kid closer. These people were really 0 to 60 on their emotional bonding, huh? Yeah, I heard about that. He's gonna be fine, though. Seriously, dude. That will is staying in the box. Eddie had a thought. I mean, he had to re-break his fingers yesterday and it barely bothered him, dude. He's fine. I swear. And fuck yes, it was the right thing to say because Dustin stopped crying almost immediately and slowly, slowly started to smile. That's fucking badass. No, it was disgusting. The noise. Eddie gagged and the kid snorted. Dustin wiped his face again and then launched into several stories of Steve experiencing grievous bodily harm that had Eddie turning pink and then green in turn. Harrington was so fucking hot and gross. Ugh. The three of them slept there in the middle of the floor on the nasty old carpet. Steve did wake up at one point with a shout that roused them all, but when he realised Dustin and Eddie were both still there, he dropped off again quick. Eddie had checked his forehead and hummed approvingly. It felt normalish. The next time they were all startled awake again, the cause was a delicate tap on the window. Eddie nearly had a coronary when he realised Nancy fucking Wheeler was peering down at them with her eyebrows drawn together. It was morning and they had apparently missed the designated check-in time. Eddie nudged Dustin. Good job on that one, tech expert. The kid just rolled his eyes and went to let Wheeler and Buckley inside. Eddie also couldn't help but notice that Steve hadn't lunged through the window and threatened Nancy's tiny neck with a rusty nail or something. Steve just lifted a sleepy shoulder when he asked. It's the pattern of the tap. She always does it the same way when she's getting someone's attention. I recognised it, I guess. Bike bells and window taps. Steve and his friends had a whole secret fucking language. Eddie shrugged it off and boldly threw an arm over Steve's shoulder. Steve just laughed and shook his head, but did nothing to dislodge him. Point 3 for Eddie. When he and Steve emerged, Eddie got a fucking quadruple take from Buckley, which was a little funny. He almost wanted to reassure her he wasn't making a move on her man. Even though he totally, totally was. Eddie was also kind of curious now how Steve would explain him away. The last few days had been such a mess he'd be surprised if Steve even remembered most of it. He was still hedging bets when, of course, Steve Harrington absolutely zagged on him. Hi guys, this is Eddie Munson. He's the only reason I'm not dead. And wow, what a way to make an entrance. Wheeler didn't hesitate to step forward and pull Eddie into a deeply awkward hug. Awkward for Eddie, maybe. Buckley was giggling with her mouth covered behind them. But as soon as Wheeler stepped back, Buckley took her place. It was less awkward with Buckley. Robin. He'd heard so much about her that he felt like they already had a kinship established. She was tall, but still had to stand on tiptoes to whisper into his ear. Thank you so much for keeping him safe. I know we've never, like, had a conversation, but that shit stain is the only reason I'm not dead. She leaned back down and blinked the tears from her eyes. And then she turned on Steve. You absolute trash man! She whacked his arm and he squawked. You miserable pile of mow grass! You fucking lemon of a person! And then she was crying for real. And Steve was hugging her. I'm really sorry, Rob. I'm so mad at you right now, I can't even look at you. That's actually fine, because as soon as you do look, you're going to feel like an asshole for smacking me. Robin immediately pulled back and stared at Steve, tears smeared all over her freckled face. Oh my God, you look like you were put through a meat grinder. That's what I'm saying, Eddie blurted. The two swung to look at him, and he felt a little cowed for the millisecond before they both burst out laughing. Dustin threw up his hands and went to gather his bike into Wheeler's trunk. It sounded like he'd muttered, platonic my ass, but that couldn't possibly be right. Robin smacked Steve's arm again, lighter this time. She sniffled. God, you're so fucked up. Is this worse than the first time Russians drugged you and beat you up? Be honest. Steve hummed. I think it hurt less this time because I wasn't wearing a sailor suit. Scientific. I'd like to see the variables on that one, Chief. I don't remember what a variable is, but I'll have my report on your desk on Monday. It is Monday. Oh, shit. Wheeler clapped her hands together to get their attention. All right, we get it. You two are the greatest comedy duo of our time. Can we please get on the road? Steve looked at her for a second before glancing at Eddie. He turned back to Wheeler. Sorry, I missed this part of the plan, I guess. Where are we going now? She smiled in a way that said, Steve Harrington, you're an idiot. Eddie recognised it because he couldn't help doing it either. Maybe he and Nancy were destined to be friends after all. We're taking you to the hospital. The Russians are gone. Murray and the crew are cleaning up the mess, so... She opened her arms wide. I think it's time Steve Harrington is found. Silence. And then... Oh shit! I forgot I was missing. Robin smacked her forehead and stepped off the porch. Nancy, with a small eye roll of her own, began to follow. Steve stopped her with a hand on her elbow and produced the handgun he'd been lugging around since yesterday. I think this is more your flavour. Wheeler grinned and snagged it, doing a cool practice aim down the barrel that would have been hot as hell were Eddie so inclined. She patted Steve on the arm and flounced back to the car, which just left Steve and Eddie. Steve turned towards him with his hands in his pockets. Guess I'm going to the hospital. You gonna go check in with Wayne? Eddie looked over at his van and mirrored Steve's posture. Yeah, also I missed, like, several days of school, so I should maybe check on that. Steve scoffed. He kicked his foot. So I'm probably gonna be in the hospital for a while, but maybe after, if you see me around, we can hang out. Or something. Eddie's heart flipped. I see what you consider hanging out, Steve. I don't know if it's my thing. Steve punched at his arm and Eddie snickered. Eddie looked over his shoulder. The girls and Dustin were in the car, but none of them were looking back at the house. They seemed content to give Eddie time to say goodbye. He turned back to Steve and found him gazing at him with those terrifying Care Bear eyes. A shudder ran down Eddie's spine. He should kiss him. The impulse rushed in so fast, it almost had Eddie staggering. The timing was perfect. He was so close, his eyes so soft, it wouldn't even be hard. And if it went sideways? Clean break. Steve goes to the hospital, and Eddie just avoids him for the rest of time. Easy. So easy. Steve's eyes flickered down and back up. He stepped in closer. He smelled like dirt and sweat and fever and their stupid, terrible time together. A long moment passed. Eddie didn't kiss him. Instead, he held out a hand and, for the second time, shook Steve Harrington's dumb palm, said something about seeing him around, and disappeared to his van. Eddie got home that night and returned to life as it was before. He was still failing high school, succeeding at selling weed, and spending a fair amount of time trying not to think about the king himself, Steve Harrington. He hugged his Uncle Wayne, called Jeff and Garrett to let them know he was good and everything was good. And then he did the smartest thing he'd done in weeks and got to work pretending the whole thing never existed. For a while, it worked. He figured he'd see Steve around someday and they'd share a look like, that was nuts, huh? But Eddie just couldn't work up the nerve to reach out. Steve, for his part, was definitely too busy recovering to make any real overtures himself. It was hard to overstate how fucked up his body had been. Apparently, one of his lungs was nearly punctured when his broken rib shifted. Ugh! That was according to Robin, who, sweet thing that she was, had taken to joining him at lunch when he bothered to show up. She also registered that the fractured ankle he'd run on for 4 days straight would probably never totally heal right. Gnarly. Plus, even after all that, Steve still had to deal with everything that came with being a found missing person. There was media everywhere for weeks, and then some celebratory assemblies and a shitload of parties. Steve never appeared at any of the events being held in his honour, but Eddie would cruise by them when he had time, just to be sure. Eddie's number one hot tip. If you're gonna run into someone by accident, it helps to be where exactly they are at all times. Note, please do not use this tip for nefarious purposes. But it didn't work. Steve was AWOL. Well, not really this time. He was just getting healthy, easing back into life, navigating a world that didn't care he was gone, but put on a real convincing mask to celebrate his return. After the initial media rush was over, most of his news started coming from Henderson. Maybe Eddie couldn't work up the nerve to track down Steve, but he would absolutely kidnap each and every one of his rugrats until they had no choice but to cross paths. Dustin waxed poetic about Steve like it was his job. And Eddie couldn't even fault him because he fucking knew the kid was right. And then when just Dustin talking about Steve hadn't been enough, the kid had coerced his friends into joining Hellfire with him so they could talk about Steve as well. It was sweet and a little painful, and he still just couldn't get his mouth around the words. Haha, nice roll. Hey, by the way, do you guys know how I can get in touch with that Steve guy? He couldn't blame them for not reading his mind, though. They were still really good fucking kids. So, life went on. He didn't get the chance to make any grand confessions to His Highness, nor did he want to fuck up the tentative friendship he'd been building with Robin. But he couldn't help but miss the dude, and wonder what would have happened if he'd just kissed his stupid face like he'd wanted to that last morning on the porch. When Steve finally returned to work, Eddie couldn't help but gaze longingly through the family video window on his commute to school, wondering, with less and less conviction, how to naturally orchestrate some sort of grand reunion. Just going in and renting a movie was too mundane, too scripted. It didn't have the serendipity and gravitas that a proper reunification should have. For Steve, He wanted something special. Funny then, wasn't it? That the next time Eddie saw Steve in person, he was holding a broken bottle to his pretty neck and heaving with holy terror because his entire fucking worldview had just been shattered to dust before his eyes.